Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
All right. Well, today we're starting a brand new series called Road to Resurrection. We're kicking it off with Ryan Meeks today, and then next week we'll have Bruce Sanguin, which is awesome. But why don't you do a great job and an embarrassingly great job of welcoming Ryan Meeks?
Thank you. Thank you. That's definitely embarrassing. Hey, good morning. It's good to see you. Hey, brother. How are you? Back from the sun. Good to see your face. So we are starting a brand new series today called Road to Resurrection, as Heather said. And I'm going to jump right in because last night at about 10 o'clock, I had 25 pages of material. So anyway, I don't have those with me. I did cut it down. The problem is I still have all 25 up here. So we need to get started. I want to say at the outset that I'm so thankful for my guides and teachers in my life that I both know personally and then those who I follow through their work. And so this talk, I'm indebted to so many people. Every time I speak, I am, but I just wanted to say that my guides from the Animas Valley Institute, Brian Stafford and Sage Maglin, were a big part of this. Teacher Adyashanti, Brene Brown, Bill Plotkin, Dr. Roger Ray, and Dr. Benner. So I just have to say that because there's just bodies and lifetimes of work that I'm leaning on for this, and I'm very excited for this message. Also, just on a little bit more of a sobering note, I'm really convinced. I knew that this message was important and it's going to be helpful for many of us, I hope, but I do believe that. However, coming here today and with the few interactions I've had with some of you in this room, I am deeply aware just over the last 20 minutes about how many of us are in a place of pain. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today, about going into that. But just know, no matter where you're at right now, especially though those of you who are in pain, just a reminder that you're not alone. It's just crazy how much we can say that to other people until we go through pain and then we're like, well, I'm definitely alone. This is a room full of people going through some tough stuff, losing people we love, and dreams dying, and relationships ending. Just a reminder that you never know who's sitting next to you, really, and to open your heart to be able to carry each other in the middle of that pain. Yesterday, me and my good friend David Lunsford were on the deck on the backside of my house, and my kids were running around, and his youngest daughter, Lucy, how old is Lucy, Lisa? She's three. She's the cutest little kid. And she comes upstairs and she says, Daddy, and my littlest son, his name's Ace. So she says, Ace says I'm a human. And he says, well, you are a human. And she says, no, I'm not. And he's like, okay, well, what are you? And she's like, I'm a Lucy. And she puts her arm on her hip and crosses her legs. And she already has these little sunglasses on. I just loved that, like that deep confidence. Like that girl knows who she is and who she is not, and nobody gets to define her. I was like, she's on her way. This is fantastic. This is the new generation. We're not putting up with that crap no more. So this series that we're going to be into this week, next week, and then Easter Sunday is called, as you heard, Road to Resurrection. And let me just say up front that, especially if you're new to Eastlake, those of you who've been around know this, but my goal isn't to get you to believe in a resurrection. It's to get you to experience your own. That's what we're going to be talking about over the next 3 weeks. And like Lucy, I would like you to know thyself and then even go a little bit beyond that, honestly, because to know thyself is important. Thank you, Socrates, for that. But unless you embody what you discover about that self, it really doesn't go anywhere. So know thyself and then embody it. In some ways, it's to say, do what is yours to do. and live what is yours to live. I think we're all of us, I don't even have to know you to make this wild guess that's totally on point, and that is, we are all looking for a life of love, of vitality, of meaning, and of service. This is just the way that we're wired as human beings, to find our place in this cosmic story. And if you're only going to, let me just give you the headline now. This is what I'm trying to tell you. The road to that kind of life, of a resurrected life of love, vitality, meaning, and service, that road, the first step is down. So that's the headline. I'm going to spend the rest of our time explaining that. But basically, the road to your best life is like, it's a downward, difficult, painful road. This is why most of us don't actually go on an authentic soul journey. And many of us just avoid it altogether with a life of, you know, meaninglessness or just trite superficiality and materialism. Or we can do the same thing religiously. We can run to religion to spiritually bypass a soul journey. And so it's a way to just sort of stay up here, oh, praising God and having these transcendent experiences to avoid the very real, material, and very messy inward journey of the soul. So what are you avoiding? That's really what I'm saying. That downward step to resurrection, that first step, which is down the downward ladder, is actually an invitation to ask yourself an honest question, and that is, what are you avoiding? What are the things that you need to deal with, face, admit, speak into life that you're trying to avoid? Here are a couple questions that maybe you'd even jot down if you're taking notes. What are you pretending not to know? What are you pretending not to know right now about your life? What scares you? Where is the fear? Maybe follow that. Where is your deep longing? What is it that you deeply long for right now? And then what is your grief? We're all carrying pain and woundedness and grief. What is yours and where is it? Not just in your story, but even in your body. Now, psychology sometimes calls this shadow work, basically. Going into that darkness. The thing you don't want to look at is the very thing. It's the door to your own liberation. And so essentially that's what I'm going to be talking about. Now, there are different philosophies on spirituality and awakening, things like this. That's probably not a surprise to you. I want to articulate three different perspectives, one that I'm offering today, one that is often called New Age, which we get accused of here, and then sort of mainstream American Christianity. So has anybody ever heard of the movie The Secret? Or the book The Secret or whatever? So I'm going to be super gentle here. I think it has a lot of wonderful things to say. But that sort of brand of New Age spirituality, which I think has a lot of beauty and truth and goodness, I think it's an incomplete message. So here's the message. I'm going to contrast these things. It says this. It starts here. You're a good person. You need to be free, but you're not. Yes, you are. Freedom is within. Okay? So you're a good person. You need to be free, but you're not. Wait, yes, you are. Freedom is within. Okay? Sounds nice. I love where it begins. You're a good person, right? You're not born inherently as an issue. But it stops at this place where it's kind of like, if you're having trouble, right? If you're not living a resurrected life right now, it's kind of like if somebody just says, freedom is within, it leaves out a little, right? It's the way you just look inward. I think there's a few more steps. Now, mainstream, and this is a generalization, mainstream American Christianity starts in a different place. First line, you're a sinner. Does that sound familiar? You're a sinner. We begin there. Secondly, God sacrificed himself to himself to be able to accept you. And then third, agreeing with that is freedom. I think both are not exactly the most helpful frameworks. Here's what I'm suggesting to you. First, to answer the question of identity, you are an evolving life. That's what you are. You're not just a good person, and you're certainly not, the first word about you is not you're a sinner, but that you're an evolving being. You are an evolving life. And then secondly, for this life to fully bloom, you are going to have to go on a downward descent. That's work, but that's what leads to your freedom. It's not as easy as freedom's within, done, So you don't even have to do anything. You already have it somehow. And so you have to pretend like all the difficulties in your life aren't actually happening. You have to manifest your way into a better, if I just imagine myself happier, I'll be happier. And because there's partial truths in there, people can sort of spend their whole lives trying to psychologically trick themselves into thinking they're actually happy. Then the whole shame-based message of this sort of mainstream American Christianity, I think, is also sort of, there's nothing to do. It's like you just have to think something, agree with a proposition, and then somehow you're transformed. What I'm suggesting today is a bummer. Resurrection is on the other end of a lot of work. And it would be easy to believe you have everything you need right now, which technically you have the resources, but, and it would be easy to believe, don't worry, God already gave you freedom and you're healed. Human beings are hilarious, aren't we? We do something that doesn't work forever. Rarely stop me to ask, like, hey, this hasn't worked. Some people spent their whole lives thinking, I just need to believe Jesus more and then everything, my life will be fixed, you know, with that framework. And what I'm suggesting to you today is, again, you're an evolving life. For that life to come into full bloom, you're going to have to go on a downward descent, and it's work. Well, let's close in prayer, why don't we? That's where we're headed, unfortunately, but this is it. Wisdom teachers from all traditions do not primarily communicate information. Wisdom teachers facilitate the awakening of hearts and the evolution of consciousness. And, of course, this is what Jesus did. It's why he's so often recognized as a wisdom teacher. But I hope you notice this, especially those of you who grew up in the church. Jesus didn't spend a ton of time teaching, hey, I can't tell you everything, but pay attention to what happens to me, because believing it is what matters. He didn't do that. Jesus taught a way of living, a way of being. And it's funny that, you know, mainstream Christianity often makes the biggest deal your thoughts about what supposedly occurred. When Jesus didn't spend his time saying, pay attention to what occurs, because really that's what matters. The rest is details. No, those are the details. What Jesus taught was a way, an embodied way, a transformational path to be walked. And it's not a path called 7 Steps to Financial Success. You know, it cracks me up. I see these like Christian books that are like the 7 leadership principles of Jesus. I'm like, who wants to use those? He got abandoned and killed, right? These aren't, we're working so hard to fold the Bible and pretend Jesus is like a management guru. It's a terrible road. Here, I should write a book sometime called the Leadership Principles of Jesus, how to piss off everybody in your culture while you call out its brokenness, and then after you die, some people will praise you. You know? Like, those are the leadership. If that's the kind of leader you want to be, then by all means, follow Jesus. But otherwise, we're just, you know, playing origami here. The fact is to follow the pattern of Easter, to follow the pattern of death, burial, resurrection is a downward descent. And in the Western world especially, we live like this spiritual descent, or what, you know, really all nature-based indigenous cultures would call initiation. So what they would take youths through, so they were healthy, mature adults. We act like it's no longer necessary, forgetting that the journey is meant for each one of us, not just for the heroes and sheroes of our mythologies or our religious traditions. That's what happens too often in Christianity. It's about praising Jesus instead of living his way, following his pattern. So I wonder if you've noticed how much of your life you go through as a sleepwalker. Ever thought about this? How much of your life do you go through on absolute autopilot? Because the message of all healthy spirituality, all healthy religious systems, is that we need to stay awake and that we need to learn to begin how to truly open our eyes. These are deep metaphorical symbols about coming awake. In Sanskrit, Buddha, many of you know this, means the awakened one. And the idea of awakening from the womb of sleep is basically the central goal of Buddhism. Now, it's said, there's a story that soon after his enlightenment, the Buddha's walking down the road and somebody runs into him and is in awe of just his presence. And he says, are you a god? And of course, he says, no, I'm not a god. And he says, well, are you a wizard or a magician? And again, no, no, no. So the guy says, well, what are you? And the Buddha is said to have responded, I'm awake. And this theme about living awake and being awake runs throughout the tradition. Now, awakening is equally important in Christianity. Jesus describes it in, I think, a much just a really strong metaphor, just being born again, to be metaphorically reborn. And this invitation to awakeness, or maybe you could say full personhood, is an invitation to respond rather than simply react, to be awake to what's going on and to make a decision rather than to sort of knee-jerk based on the circumstances or the stimuli in your life, which ultimately leads, imagine this, to a life where you are a full participant in your life. What would it look like to be a full participant in your own life? I mean, it sounds a little bit jokey, but isn't it true that sometimes you're like, wow, my life is just like going by and I'm not even participating in it so much because we can live on autopilot. Now, this isn't a rule, but I want to suggest to you today that most people's breakthroughs come from breakdowns. And the path of descent, the path of really discovering who you truly are, to know thyself and then embody that self, comes from breakdown often. I love the poet David White, who's a local guy. Apparently, he lives on Whidbey Island. I love this poem. He says, "You too saw for the first time your own house turn to ashes, everything consumed so the road could open again." I love that imagery, that your own house burned to ashes so the road could open again. There's something about the journey of self-actualization, something about the spiritual journey where what you've built has to be destroyed for you to continue. This is just a part of healthy psychological and spiritual development. That's why Jesus is so frustrating, right? I mean, American Christianity so watered him down to being like this like kind guy with the lammy on his shoulders, you know? But people were always wanting to kill him, right? All the time. Eventually they do, but, you know, he's just frustrating. I remember one time I went to grab my water bottle and I drank it, and all of a sudden I was like choking. My son, I didn't know, had been dropping Kleenex in it, and my throat just got coated with Kleenex immediately, just like, and of course, like, cough that up a bit. I'll spare you the details. But oftentimes the message of Jesus to people was like just having your throat filled with Kleenex. It's like, there's just something about this conflict, this sort of like rejection of everything I've ever known being destroyed. And so what do we do with that? What do we do with change makers like that? People who reject the system as it is, well, we have to get rid of them. They're like mustard in the chocolate cake. They're like fiberglass in your britches, you know? This is not a good thing. And this is why people are always trying to kill Jesus. Jesus called blessed everything we try to avoid. Again, this is what I'm saying. What you're trying to avoid is the road. In most cases. He says, you're blessed when you're spiritually poor. Have you ever been like poverty-stricken of spirit? Jesus basically starts his ministry in many ways with this line. That's happiness is found in spiritual poverty, where you know nothing, where you are nothing, where your self-will is exhausted, where you're saying, I can't do this anymore. He said, there it is. That's where it starts. You're lucky because you have access to something. It's a deeper way of living. And the truth is we protect ourselves from that kind of a consciousness at all costs because the small self, our ego, which is kind of this, basically this mask that we wear. Here's who I am. I'm Ryan Meeks. Here are the markers of what makes me me. I got to protect that at all costs because I don't trust that there's something deeper and more true and more eternal underneath that. And so we have to protect it. I don't know if anyone's heard of St. John of the Cross. Anybody ever heard of him? Great mystic. He talks about this secret ladder. I'll read you a brief line. One dark night, fired with love's urgent longings, I went out unseen, my house being now all stilled in darkness and secure by the secret ladder disguised. And his whole thing is about this cloud of unknowing, going into the ambiguity, the darkness, the abyss, as the depth of coming to know oneself and to know whatever you mean by the word God. But make no mistake, it is a ladder that goes down. It's not up. Again, I would encourage you to see it. I think Bill Plotkin does a good job of this. I would encourage you to see sort of your spiritual growth in 3D. There's the ascent, which is like when you have these peak, mystic, transcendent experiences of oneness. This is like meditation. Sometimes you can have that, or I have it at like music festivals. I mean, it's like, I'm totally sober, but you know, Anyway, but these are just these high moments. Those things are good things. That's where you sort of melt into the oneness that is all of the universe, and that feels good. But there's another growth. That's to spirit. Think of the downward descent as the growth to soul. Spirit is about everything that makes us one, everything that we share. Soul is about your uniqueness. And to get to that point is just as important. You have to grow. You grow omnidirectionally is what I'm trying to say. Sadly, for so many, soul encounters only happen on deathbeds. For so many people, it takes death for this ego to just shatter and for the scales to fall from our eyes and actually see the truth. And for too many people, it happens there because the egos, you know, won't relinquish control, can't let go. The death of that small ego self, that small consciousness, is just holding on. Because only when we do so, only when we let go, when we relinquish control, when we enter into the spiritual poverty, do we actually arrive in the eternal now, the here and now, which is when Jesus is talking about the kingdom, that's what he's talking about all the time. The kingdom takes place in the here and now. The kingdom that he's always talking about is not about then and when. Kingdom is, oh, when Jesus this, you know, I grew up hearing all that stuff. One day Jesus' kingdom is always then and when. But the kingdom that Jesus is talking about when he says the kingdom is within you, I don't know about you, but I experience you here. How are you experiencing me? Here and now. And if the kingdom is within you, me, us, then the kingdom is here and now. Zen Buddhism teachings call it the backwards step. I think Jesus uses similar language when he says repent. That just, by the way, just means turn around. I think I grew up in the church where I would have thought defining it was be ashamed. That's how I heard it. I don't know if you grew up in a tradition that was like always telling you, repent. And what they really meant was feel ashamed for who you are. You need to be rescued because you're so terrible. But the word repent just literally means turn around, go in another way. You can imagine like, you know, your little navigator lady in your car saying, instead of recalculating, you know, you say, repent. You know, that's all. Just, you're going the wrong way. Rethink it. Get going the other direction. When I think of Jesus, one thing seems really clear. And actually, I read more Bible this past week than I have in a long time. And mostly the Gospels. But man, as I was reading through, one thing just comes back to me clearer and clearer. Whoever Jesus was, this was a dude who knew who he was and knew what he was about. And without fear, and without apology, he would live and do what was his to do. He would live what was his to live, and he would say the truth that was his to say. There's just no apology for what that was. Come what may, screw the fallout, what would happen. This was a person who was fully alive in their truth. And frankly, can we be honest that that's a kind of living most of us are afraid to do? We're afraid to be who we really are, to say where we're really at, to be honest about our actual failings. We're constantly managing this external image of who we need to be for our family, for our work environment, for our tribe, for our religious communities. We can only give so much of our actual truth. We can only face or allow people to see so much of our actual reality that we're always managing this other side. But to live fully open, like open-hearted, completely honest with folks in our lives, that's a really hard thing to do. And I've noted, and I think it's because we actually do believe that if we do that, if we live that Jesus way, that Jesus openness, that different relationships and different communities that we're a part of will crucify the parts of us that they can't handle. You know, you're an organic part of the world, which means that you're going to be a part of an ecosystem. Right? Like your body's an ecosystem, first of all. But even relationally, you live in an ecosystem. And as soon as, if you've probably experienced this, if you've been coming to East Lake for years, then you've experienced how your change and transformation disrupts the ecosystem. Because you're supposed to be this kind of person who thinks this way and does these things and whatever, votes this way or whatever else it is. And as soon as one person begins to change, the ecosystem either has to adjust to the difference or reject what no longer fits in the system, or demand that it go back and play that role it's always played. Is any of this resonating with people who've been around for years? Hello, hallelujah, we're getting Pentecostal in here today. It's fantastic.
Hey everyone, excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own community. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
You know, for the first few months of this year, I've been working on getting certified as a life coach because I've noticed so much of, I mean, I've done pastoral counseling for 14, 15, 16 years. And I've noticed so much of what in that world does is just help people in their own power discover what they really need to do. And so, but I've noticed over the, you know, first few months of meeting with a lot of people and just taking walks and chatting, that everyone's story is unique, but the same theme keeps coming up again and again. And here it is. Listen to this. See if it resonates with you. People are not being honest about who they really are, where they're really at, what they really want, and they're not doing what they feel called to do. Some are waiting for permission. Some need to know they're not alone. But all of them are terrified of the fallout of being honest. True, direct, and open. Because they think they're going to lose the life they're living right now, which, to steal a line from Fell from the Star, the people who play up here sometimes, you're living someone else's life. You're chasing someone else's dream. No wonder nothing ever seems right, because you're living someone else's life. It's so interesting to me that we're so terrified of being honest because we're going to lose this life when it's not ours anyway. Remember, you know what it feels like to get in a fender bender? Do you know what it feels like to drive by someone else's fender bender? Not that big a deal, right? Unfortunately, it's just like, oh, bummer for you. We're over it immediately. If it's you, we're like, ooh, right? And yet, we are terrified of losing a life that isn't ours. We're like, oh my gosh, if I'm honest, I'll lose my not life, this half life where I'm not me at all. Let it go. Invite the chaos to your life, which is the crumbling of untruth, to live free and authentically with yourself, hello, first and foremost, with your understanding of God and with community, and the true people who love you will still be there. And you don't have to waste any more time with the fakeness. My buddy Darren sent me this, Macklemore. Is it okay? I live in Seattle and I don't listen to Macklemore. Hope that's okay. But I hear he says this in one of the songs, I'm really good at telling the half-truth, but usually only when I have to. I think that's really true. And I want to actually underline even and especially to ourselves. Like I said earlier, what are you pretending not to know? There's so much work that goes on in our psyche to avoid being aware of what we're already aware of. So we have to manufacture this narrative in this story that basically protects us from that. Here's why. Because the journey to awakening, whatever word you want to use, awakening, enlightenment, salvation, the road to that is paved with loss. That's what I'm saying, right? That your own house burned to ashes so the road could open again. Awakening is not this like fun, happy, like, oh, I'm getting so enlightened, you know? It's like chaos. You're like, am I losing my mind? I'm definitely losing my friends, you know? Because, right, you screwed up the ecosystem. It's a terror. I remember there's this guy, a lifelong Christian guy who grew up in the church, who was himself in a same-sex relationship when we at Eastlake made our statement of full affirmation. And I remember he was very angry. Isn't that interesting? It doesn't shock me because, and as I'll explain in a little bit, but you can imagine the guy who had felt imprisoned, you know, by a rigid and toxic religious system and judgment from whether it was family of origin or his pastors or Sunday school teachers. You'd think he'd be jumping for joy to realize that here's a place he doesn't have to pretend, that he no longer has to deny himself the opportunity to be open about being in a loving relationship with another man, to be in an actualized life and a community that accepts that. But he wasn't. He was actually pretty mad. And although he and his partner stuck around for a little while, he eventually left for a church that would teach that he and his lover were an abomination. You'd think that good news would be experienced as good news. But that's not how enlightenment works. That's not how salvation works. That's not how awakening works. That's why Jesus is threatened by crowds where he's preaching the good news. They're picking up rocks to kill him. Like, they're like, how can you say that you and the Father are one? And he's like, your own scriptures. And he quotes the Psalms. You're all gods. And they're like, no, we're not. You know, and they want to throw rocks at him. He's like trying to affirm people and raise the level of their awareness. But why? Why do we resist this? See, we all experience change, even change for the better, as absolutely traumatic. We experience it as a loss. Think of a baby in the womb. It grows and grows in that environment until the environment itself is actually out of space. It's crushing them. They're jammed into an airless space that they absolutely must escape. And yet, how do they come into the world? Usually painfully and also making a bit of noise. Right? Like, I don't like this, I think is the translation of what you hear when a child is born, right? It's cold out here and everything was just dandy before. The business of waking up is messy and it's very costly, okay? Think, you know, century ago plus, slavery, and as the consciousness of the earth grows, people are like, this is wrong. But, by the way, this could be taken so out of context. I'm saying slavery's bad always, but if you put yourself in the mind of people who were growing to that awareness, who currently benefited from slavery, they had so much to lose. Like literally, the entire Southern economy was built on this. And so you can imagine the psychological games you play as this consciousness of this is unjust begins to rise in your heart and mind about how hard you have to work to be like, I could lose everything, right? Okay, so it's a good thing. Lose that. Don't take that out of context. That's a good thing. But what I'm saying is we do the same thing. As our consciousness rises, we're like, oh no, if that's true, this. That's what the ego does. Don't do it! Right? Because there's a life that the ego thrives inside of. And so the ego is always going to be like, you're going to live in a van down by the river. That's where the ego always goes. You're going to live in a van down by the river is what the ego is always saying to you. Don't live authentically. Don't tell them. They'll hate you. All that kind of stuff. The last few years of helping people let go of unhealthy theologies here at Eastlake has definitely underlined this for me. I was naive enough to think, if you just tell people you don't have to live like that, everyone's going to be like, thank you. Actually, part of me knew that wasn't true. But people seem to frantically cling to their literal stories of talking snakes and oceans that are parting, who talk about Noah's Ark like it was a documentary. And they force themselves into an intellectual straitjacket where they both have to defend the truth of the Bible that clearly describes the earth as being flat while simultaneously insisting that anyone who believes the earth is flat is nuts. You can't have it both ways. Now, the only reason people would continue to embrace absurdity like that in a scientific age, in the era of the Hubble telescope, is simply this. It would cost them too much to leave the womb. One of my favorite teachers, Adya Shanti, whose book I would recommend to you, At the End of Your World is what it's called. He says, make no mistake about it, enlightenment is a destructive process. It has nothing to do with becoming better or happier. Enlightenment is the crumbling away of untruth. Enlightenment is the crumbling away of untruth. It's seeing through the facade of pretense. It's the complete eradication of everything we imagine to be true. Richard Rohr says it similarly. I think he just says all growing spiritually is basically unlearning. It's not a bunch of addition. It's all this subtraction. See, I don't think anyone, once liberated from a fear-based religion, with all that neurotic guilt and fear and shame, denial of reality, would ever go back willingly to that psychological prison. But leaving it for the first time is absolutely terrifying to those who are afraid to let go of the certainty that it provides and the social connections that it confers on you. You belong to a tribe, and we want belonging more than we want the truth. Often folks are more comfortable just stopping going to church altogether. In fact, well, I don't have to say a name, so I can share the story. A friend of mine who left Eastlake, who I'm still friends with, but he left over our inclusion statement, told me recently, I just don't go to church now. And he was just saying, you know, it's just too hard for me after Eastlake. And I'm like, you know what? Let me suggest, because we're friends, I could do this. Let me suggest to you that it's just a reminder that you don't believe this stuff anymore. But you don't want to tell yourself that you know that. And so it's easier to be like, I believe all that stuff, but I just don't go to church. It's easier than saying, look, that magical thinking and Iron Age mythology is over for me, and I got to deal with that. I got to go on that downward journey. And he flipped me off, and then we kept having beers and hanging out. To be on a spiritual journey, friends, as opposed to being religious, to be on a spiritual journey means that from time to time, you are going to find yourself with outgrown spiritualities. You're just going to get to this point where the clothes don't fit, the theologies don't work for you because of relationships and experiences, the sort of guidelines and the dogmas you've been handed that you agreed with to sort of fit into whatever group you were in, they just don't work for you anymore. And you need to learn to expect that. Otherwise, every time, you know, something shifts in you, you have to experience it as a crisis. You don't have to do that. Know that you're going to change. Know that you're going to experience something and you're going to be like, it's wrong about that. Why do we get so stressed out about that? You're going to get tons more stuff wrong. Congratulations. I mean, we are so arrogant as to think we got to not only think that we're going to get things right or be disappointed in ourselves when we're wrong, that we also need to show everybody else that we've always been right. How insane is that? I got here in 1978. I'm new here. I'm learning. You're collecting data is what you're doing. Next time you make a mistake, be like, oh, I'm going to put that in my data notebook. Don't do that no more, right? You're just learning as you go. Okay. To be on a spiritual journey is to change. Doing this kind of spiritual house cleaning sometimes leads people to respond to their earlier stages of spiritual development with shame. Peter has said this before. He's like, Ken Wilber says, transcend and include as you grow. Peter says, transcend and look back embarrassed or something like that. And that's what I'm talking about. It's easy to do that. It's easy to be like, oh, I was wrong. And then look back and go, oh, I can't believe I was so dumb or naive. That is both unfortunate and unnecessary. Peter, who's not here. It means, when we say that, it means we haven't come to terms with our own story. We haven't integrated our story. That stage was a part of getting us to this stage. You don't get to stand on those boxes and then look down at the boxes and go, boo. That's how you got here, man. That's a part of your development. And if you don't learn to integrate those things in there and to be able to identify the gifts that stage offered you that you received to get to where you are today, then you're never going to be able to say, bless it all. Everything belongs. It's made it what it is. It's made me what I am. Often what you look at as a setback ends up being a setup. Things crumbling open the road again. Things, you know, burning to ash so the road could open. So be gentle with yourself is what I'm saying here. Embrace your past or you'll never transcend it and trust that everything belongs. When we stop resisting this descent, it's easier for us to see and honor the grace in what was behind us, the prior stages of development, relationally, spiritually, and, you know, mentally, emotionally, all of it. Have you ever heard the phrase, it's always darkest just before the dawn? You hear that? I'm like, actually, it's always like darkest when it's dark. Is actually how it is. You know, that's what Mickey said. It's just like when there's no light, that's when it's darkest, actually. So when the light is like as far away as it could be, that's when it's its darkest. And what I'm saying today is that those are the times when what is next for us is to grow downward rather than trying to escape the pain. Trying to suppress it or avoid it, spiritual bypass it, medicate it just to numb out. It's not going to work. If you have to do that right now because you absolutely cannot face it, I'm not a licensed therapist, but I just say, okay, do what you got to do. But you're going to have to come back and address it. You're going to have to come back at some point and face it because that's what's next for you. I know we prefer positive thinking and manifesting and visualizing your dream. And there are plenty of people on staff who probably disagree with what I'm saying right now. And by the way, if you're new to Eastlake, you don't have to agree with anything that's ever said up here. But I'm just saying, I know we love the upward ascent. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to forget all this stuff. I'm one with the universe. That's all true. But it can be a way of basically spiritual bypassing. It's a way to avoid. And it's a way, well, just avoid it, of avoiding the descent. I mean, it's like meditation can take you to this place where you're like, oh, I'm so aware of, you know, my oneness. And the problem is actually your ego can come with you all the way up. I don't know if you've noticed that. Where your spirituality, your awakening can become a badge for your ego. Your ego loves the upward ascent. It's like, oh, let me take a quick selfie on the dock in my yoga pose, hashtag inner peace, you know? Everybody loves how spiritual they are. But if you don't do, like I said, the shadow work, then the ego will come with you. And people can be all the way up here. I know great, incredible spiritual gurus and teachers who collapsed under the weight of their shadow that they never addressed. We see it happen in churches all the time. Upward feels good, downward feels bad, but it is essential. But if we can experience the pain and downward growth, which ego says is bad, and the ego freaks out, if you can just let the dog that is your ego keep barking, row, 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 no, van by the river. If you can just let that go, yep, I hear that, but this is what's next for me, is the downward ascent. Truth, honesty, transparency, authenticity. This is where I'm at. This is who I am. This is where I struggle. And this is what I feel pulled and called to and passionate about. If you can live that kind of authentic life, then you're going to experience resurrection and liberation. Being rejected can be a positive part of this. I can tell you. It sounds scary to be rejected by your tribe and your community and maybe all the benefits that were conferred on you when you fit in correctly. But I'm telling you, rejection and the pain of that is a gift because you grow beyond the absolute socially acceptable realm, right? Once your tribe says you're no longer acceptable, you can't strive for it anymore because you're already kicked out. And so now you're like, okay, well, I'm out now. So now I don't spend any energy making sure everyone still likes me, and now I can sort of face myself and where I'm at. The most transformational people in history were often very socially unacceptable. Truth tellers like Socrates and Jesus and Gandhi and Galileo and Dr. King and naturalist and weirdo and personal hero of mine, John Muir, animal rights philosopher Peter Singer, Susan B. Anthony, Malala, Mariel Franco, who was just killed in Rio. These states of pain and isolation, of rejection that we're afraid of, they're actually very desirable for your ongoing development and growth and transformation. Embrace them. When I was, I did a wilderness fast a few weeks ago, and I'm actually not going to talk about it much. One, because I still am integrating it. I don't know what to do with it. It was so beyond anything I've ever experienced. I was in the wilderness or in the desert for 2 weeks, and a part of it was I was in this like 20-yard circle where I couldn't move for 4 days, and I wasn't eating, and it's wacko. So anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. I don't know exactly what happened there, but I do know that I experienced a ton of grief. Like, just grief would just came out of nowhere. As soon as I put my pack down, it came out of me like, and I know people are like, oh, we know you're a crier. I tear up here. What happened out there came out of me in waves of sobbing grief that I haven't experienced since I was a little kid, where I had access and no shame to just grief. But, you know, we get conditioned. And I was in a place where there was nobody to impress. And it just came out of me. I'm convinced a lot of it, I know a lot of it was, I never let my body grieve my cancer. And, you know, put on a strong face. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to stay positive. And then I got to the friggin' desert, and my body was like, oh my God, what happened to us? And it just poured out of me for hours. I'm telling you, if you don't process your grief, it's not gone. it's not gone. And unless you give yourself the space and a place to let what's really in you process healthy, it's going to come out of you in negative ways. And it's going to keep you from moving forward on your spiritual journey. Okay, I need to wrap up because I'm over time. I'll just say this. Resistance and avoidance doesn't work. Know that there will always be that part of you that's a super important part of you. That ego protected you as a kid. The parts of you that couldn't be allowed in your family of origin or your social setting, that really loyal part of you protected you from the trauma that you couldn't have dealt with. And so it told you, put that away, keep that in, so that you can still be loved because you're too vulnerable. You can go off on your own. But that war of your childhood, it needs to end in your adulthood. And maybe you need to ask that question of yourself, is the war of childhood over? Because if it's not, you need to go back and deal with those things. And that is the downward descent. At the beginning, and we're, you know, next week is the begins sort of the Holy Week, right? On the way to Palm Sunday and then Easter. But the road to Jerusalem that Jesus walked, you know, in the story, knowing where he was headed. This is not seven steps to success, Jesus stuff. This is the road, and it sucks. And you can't avoid it. Many people do, and they wait till they're on their deathbed to face the truth of their soul. But you don't have to wait that long. Jesus says in John chapter 12, the hour has come for the Son of Man, Jesus' favorite title for himself, which simply means the human one, by the way. The hour has come for the human one to be glorified. Notice that. Truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. So, human ones, Lucy's of the world, do you know who you are? And are you willing to discover it in ever-deepening layers of authenticity and truth and pain and beauty and loss, all the while walking a road to resurrection? Will you stand as we close? You know, I grew up in a church world that loved to do things in January. I've even taught sermons like this, like in January, like the new you this year, you know, that kind of stuff. You reset your life. I had a moment in the desert where I realized it's not Nintendo, dude. You can't just like, oh, I died at the water level. You know, I got to just reset, then I'll just get straight to the warp. You know what I'm saying? Have you noticed this yet? Are you old enough to realize the truth that you can never start over? You're like, this is the end? You know, like, you can't start over. You can only start from where you are with new energy and a new vision. So you got to just realize that what is in your past isn't going away. You have to integrate it, feel it, and then make a decision to move in a new direction that aligns with your values and who you want to be in the world. But you can't start over. Even the resurrection story of Jesus isn't Jesus like coming out of the tomb as a baby. Do you notice that? He didn't start over. But he was transformed in many ways. You could say he didn't even really walk out. It was like spiritual. He's walking through walls and people don't recognize him. I don't even get necessarily what's going on in that story. But I'm telling you this, your resurrection might make you unrecognizable to your community, to yourself. But if you have the courage to walk into that, you may discover a deeper truth about who you are than you ever believed. What if you're more powerful than you ever could have imagined? Sometimes we're just stuck to that old story because we're scared of actually living into that kind of a power. So the road to resurrection begins with a downward step. I invite you to take it. Have a good week. We'll see you.